I'm Marianne Kobasek McGee, Executive Editor at Information Security Media Group. Today I'm speaking with Mike Hamilton, Field CISO of security firm Lumify Cyber and former CISO of the City of Seattle. We're going to be discussing challenges faced by rural healthcare providers. So, Mike, even though rural hospitals don't have deep pockets, they keep falling victim to cyber criminal attacks, including ransomware encryption and data exfiltration. Why do you think that's the case?
Well, I think those two things are correlated. You know, they don't have deep pockets, so it becomes very difficult for them to apply the resourcing that's needed to do the things that need to be done to lower their risk profile and make them an unattractive target. Today, those are very attractive targets. You know, as you know, they're critical. Especially rural healthcare is very critical because they're widely separated in rural areas. And so knock down a hospital, all of a sudden someone has to drive 450 miles for treatment, and that's bad, right? That is a threat to, you know, patient care. Loss of life is a potential impact there, and that's actually happened. So, you know, I think it's because they're not resourced, and it's just very difficult for them to up their game.
So now, when it comes to the particular cyber challenges faced by rural and small hospitals, what stands out to you? You know, we mentioned the, you know, the lack of resources. What makes their cyber challenges different from those faced by larger healthcare sector entities?
Well, I think it's just, you know, it's we can always say it's the inability or to the failure to adhere to standards of practice. But if you take a step back and you look at the prevalent ways that initial access is gained to a network, it's social engineering, it's credential abuse, and it's vulnerability exploit. And social engineering, you can train your users, that will never be perfect. Credential abuse, you can do real password management, use password vaults, prohibit the storage of passwords in browsers. But when it gets to vulnerability exploit, you know, it's really, you have to patch faster than they attack. And in today's world, the attack starts 15 minutes after the patch is released. Threat actors, and that includes nation states, are going to work, you know, reverse engineering, disassembling the patch to find out what it fixes so that they can code up an exploit that will break that thing simultaneously. And reporting is within 15 minutes of the patch release, they will be scanning the internet for vulnerable systems. So it's a race. And if you can't beat them to the punch, right, you may think you're small, you're not important. Why would they come after? The scanner does not care. They are going to find you. They're going to find an exposed system that has not been patched. And now they even automate, you know, the exploit, the compromise. So it happens so quickly. And that's where rural healthcare really has difficulty in keeping up with things like that. They're, you know, their mission is patient care. And so they don't necessarily drop what they're doing every time a patch is released and rush out there to fix it and treat it as an incident, which they should.
So with that said, what are some of your suggestions for how rural hospitals with thin budgets and perhaps a small cyber workforce can realistically bolster their cybersecurity and address some of these issues that you just brought up?
Well, I spoke recently at a conference about some of these things, and there are a lot of low-cost and no-cost solutions for rural healthcare. It does require that you have human resources that are able to manage those technologies, and there is a certain risk to using things like, you know, open source software because of how open source software is maintained. Really leaning into some of the things that have been historically provided by the federal government, CISA, in, you know, doing a risk and resilience assessment, scanning your perimeter for vulnerabilities so that you can be notified, hey, you really need to patch this thing. We just found this. So there are some solutions out there that, you know, are not going to break the bank. Overall, I think it's really, if you were going to focus on the most prevalently used methods or compromising network, you would lean way into those things. Train your users, manage your credentials, and yes, get good with patching, right? Make sure that you have very good communication between you and the vendors that supply the technology that faces the internet. Those three things would be really important. So if you try and simplify this down to the fewest number of things possible, it would be those three, and then add to that a policy change. Personal use will now be conducted on a personal device. And so, for lack of a better term, cut your users off from using the internet so that they don't run across bait that they can make a mistake and, hit on and compromise an internal system to a hospital network.
So, Mike, you mentioned CISA. Anything else that you think the federal government or maybe even state or local governments can do to help the rural hospitals in the country, especially as you mentioned, many times if one important hospital goes down in a small community, it could be miles or maybe even hours for, the nearest hospital to be accessed by a patient in a distressful time. Any suggestions?
Well, with respect to the federal government, it is increasingly looking like we're on our own. We are going to have to fill the gaps that are left by CISA and, let's just say, reducing that workforce and some of the critical things that it was doing. Like I said, the risk and resilience assessments and things like that. I don't know if those are going to go forward. I don't know if the known exploited vulnerabilities catalog is going to be maintained. That's CISA's catalog of here are the things that the bad guys actually exploit. If you have one of these things, it's very important that you patch it. So, I think it's going to go to the states. I think states are going to have to provide some kind of support there, and it could be in the form of establishing internships with all of the schools that are teaching cybersecurity and deploying interns out into rural healthcare to watch logs, look for signs of compromise, things like that. Again, we probably want to also lean into some of the no-cost products. There are also interesting nonprofits that assist rural healthcare. For example, the Pisces Project, which does no-cost cyber monitoring in return for collecting data from networks and using it as live fire curriculum for universities across the country. That way you have students acting as your analysts. Is it perfect? No. Is it 24/7? No. But that is a solution that, has potential there. I'll also say that there, with respect to monitoring, incident response, things like that, there is an interesting monitoring system. Call it a stack that has been developed by Idaho National Lab using Homeland Security funding. It's called Malcolm. Malcolm is open source. You can implement it. It's based on the Amazon's fork of Elasticsearch, so it's called OpenSearch. It's free to use and it's capable of monitoring operational technologies. And so in hospitals, yeah, you're not a dam operation. You can't twist a knob and make a dam open. But there are lots of smaller operational technologies, call them medical IoT, within those environments. And that would be good to implement for monitoring. Apart from that, I know that some states are working on volunteer corps so that if there is a disruption of critical infrastructure within a state, there are people that we can activate that will get out there to help right the ship as quickly as possible. So there's a few solutions that can be implemented that are exclusive of federal support, which is in question right now.
So, Mike, besides the challenges faced by rural hospitals, what else are you keeping your eyes on these days in the healthcare cybersecurity landscape and why?
Well, this isn't really directly having to do with cybersecurity, but loss of Medicaid. Again, the conference I just attended, there was a policy briefing, and political consultants launder their words, but it was pretty clear we need to be prepared for the loss of Medicaid funding. And there are lots of rural healthcare institutions that receive 85% of their revenue from Medicaid. And if that's not there, they won't be there. So it's, yeah, they're getting knocked over by bad guys. They're being extorted. They may just get erased. And that's a bigger thing on my mind than, how do we keep the bad guys out?
Along those lines, as we've discussed, there is uncertain federal climate right now when it comes to cybersecurity and funding and all those other sorts of issues that could impact the healthcare sector. What other federal issues are you kind of looking at right now in terms of this uncertainty with the healthcare sector? Is it, enforcement? Is it, moving on with the rulemaking with HIPAA security rule? What kind of stands out right now?
So the new director of CISA is Sean Plankey, and Sean Plankey comes from DoD Offensive Operations. And so I believe that Mr. Plankey will bring more of a deterrence frame of view to the conversation we're having, and less so, here are the products and services we have for you to use for free to support you in your efforts to not get knocked over by a nation state or a criminal gang. In addition, the Director of National Intelligence is more focused on, I think, market forces than regulation. So regulation is really going to be in question. I know that we've come out, with the cybersecurity performance goals, and there's the hiccup, the healthcare cybersecurity practices guide. They were proposing changes to HIPAA. I think all of that is going to stall. And again, it's going to be based more on market forces. So if you don't get your act together and you do get knocked over, it's your fault. I'm paraphrasing, but from the way I read the appointments going into CISA and Director of National Intelligence, things like that, that's kind of what I see on the horizon.
You mentioned Plankey being appointed to head CISA. When it comes to that sort of offensive stance, what might we see? Would it be more, they hack us, we hack them back? What would you expect to see under that kind of mindset?
Well, unfortunately, what I see in that kind of mindset is more of a deterrence against nation states that are antagonistic to the values of the United States. So, and in particular, China. And in fact, a couple of senators wrote a letter to the president saying that they really want to support efforts to, in this deterrence mindset. And really, I think more it's going to be nation states, right? So, the Volt Typhoon actors that are compromising critical infrastructure, they're going to find and melt their infrastructure, and we're going to name those members, those operators, those actors, and sanction them as we have. There's $2 million reward out now for any information that will lead to the arrest of these Chinese nationals that they've identified as part of Volt Typhoon. I don't know how they're going to view cybercrime because there hasn't been any conversation around that. It's more about deterring nation states from compromising our infrastructure. Now, healthcare is critical infrastructure, clearly, and we can't let healthcare get any worse in this country. So they could be thinking of deterrence in terms of criminal actors as well, but we're just going to have to see. It's not in print right now, and I review these things every day. And I'm just not seeing that.
What about Russia? As we know, many of the large attacks on healthcare have been committed by Russian-speaking cybercriminal gangs. How do you think we're going to handle that?
I don't know. That's the thing in particular that I don't see being mentioned. It's China, China, China all over the place, but not Russia. And yes, we know that there are these criminal gangs, they've evolved. And they offer compromise as a service, ransomware as a service, affiliate models, things like this. And unfortunately, that has facilitated a lot of folks domestically getting into this kind of crime. And so, the population of threat actors has gone way up, largely facilitated by these affiliate models and, the as a service models. That's the kind of thing where I think we really need to apply some pressure because we need to deter our own, and I'll generalize, Gen Z from being attracted to crime because it's been made so easy. Again, I would like to see somewhere some statement from the federal government about what the plan is to go after crime coming from Russia, Eastern Europe, but have not seen that.
Well, thank you so much, Mike. I've been speaking to Mike Hamilton. I'm Marianne Kolbasek-McGee of Information Security Media Group. Thanks for joining us.